Hello and welcome to Additive Insight, the original additive manufacturing podcast and your source for news, interviews and comments on the latest 3D printing and additive manufacturing intelligence, brought to you by TTT Magazine. I'm your host, Sam Davis, and today I'm joined by Anita Print CEO, Ryan Yeo. Yeo came into the business a couple of years ago to launch the Anita Print brand in China and was recently announced as CEO with founder Fedor Antonov transitioning into the role as CTO. His appointment to CEO came about after Anita Print moved its headquarters to China, with Yeo providing insight on the Chinese 3D printing sector and the opportunities for Anita Print in their new domestic market. We also discussed the development of Anita Print's composite 3D printing portfolio, why the global market is still important to the company, and what we can expect from Anita Print moving forward. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For more additive insight, head on over to tctmagazine.com where you can subscribe to the print edition of TCT Magazine and our weekly Additive Insight newsletter for free. Ryan, welcome to the Additive Insight podcast. You, I think, came into the Anita Print business a few years ago now. So I wanted to kind of start there. Obviously, we'll come on to Anita Print moving its headquarters to Shanghai. But before that, what can you tell me about developing the Anita Print brand in China over these last 3 years?
Thank you, Sammy, for having me at your channel. Yeah, it's a great honor. So certainly, so I've been working together with Anita Print for like the past 4 years. Yeah, and in the first, I would say, first 3 years from 2020 to 2022, end of 2022, basically I was solely focusing on developing the market in China. Yeah, so before 2020, there's absolutely no one in the whole market has even heard about Anita Print, and we just found out it's a great product, you know, very attractive technology. Yeah, with this, you know, lightweight continuous fiber reinforced parts, like 3D printed. Yeah, so we, went down the major trade shows in China, and we tried to spread it out to like all the major resellers in the market, and we went door to door, to tell them about this new company, new product, new technology. I think soon the voice was like spoken out for Anita Print like quite soon, like so after a few trade shows and a few months of visiting around this all around China, these resellers, like great part of the people in the industry had already heard about the product, and we started to see some results. At first, starting with academia, right? So, and I would believe in favor of this open system, of Anita Print, so you could play around with continuous fiber together with different matrix materials, and you have more options, you know, more inner structure of the carbon fiber. And it's a very handy tool for researchers to use in both of education and research. So we get the machine to like almost every single tier one university in China like within a year and a half. So after a year and a half, like almost all of this, 60 tier one university in China had already had at least one machine, and some could even have like 5 to 10 machines, right? Then from academia, we march into the industrial application. Yes. So as China is, a manufacturing hub, for the world, I would say, And I think the niche for continuous fiber is the easiest and most obvious application is the jigs and tools and fixture. So we bring the solution to many like major manufacturers like the automotives, right? Even like The new energies like battery manufacturers are even also for like, you know, daily household manufacturers, such as I would say like the manufacturer for like starter cells. Yeah, they could also use this technology to, you know, print complicated shaped jigs and grips. Yeah, and to reduce like their cost for making those tools.
So in terms of your own personal background, how much experience had you had with 3D printing, and how much knowledge did you have of 3D printing before joining the company?
Mm-hmm. Actually, I would say, yeah, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So before 3D, during Anatoprint, I was the channel manager for like extremely different kind of industrial product company. Yeah. Yeah, a public company in China, so I was responsible for like the overseas channel sales management. Yeah. So 3D printing was actually a new thing to me, and the continuous fiber 3D printing was even newer. Yeah, but I think thankfully I had an engineering background. So right. Before this experience, I was actually working as an industrial engineer in Canada, and we had some experience, but more as end users. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So as you stepped into the the role of CEO, and obviously Fedor, the founder of the business, moved into the CTO role, what do you see as your kind of remit and your responsibility as the CEO? What is the overarching objective for the company, and what do you kind of bring to the company, do you think?
I think when I joined the company, like both Peter and I had this idea, but that was for like the longer term, and this transition actually happened faster than what we would like expect. Yeah. Uh-huh. I think it's mainly due to the, you know, fundraise. Yeah. So for the like technical startup, the fundraising is always the key, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At first to survive, and then the second to like to grow and to prosper, to succeed.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of effort, right? And yeah, so finally successfully reached the first major round for Anatoprint, and with like a very top VC in China. So the responsibility for like, you know, dealing with current investors and for like potential investors, this investor relationship role fell on my shoulder. Yeah, and also I was taking charge of most of the business development and management, right? So yeah, so we both believe it would be more efficient for me to take over the general management role for the company, and as also like Feder was more of a technical co-founder, you know, he's a PhD, and he's like definitely the top expert in this field, and he enjoys actually more for himself to like dive more, spending more time, you know, diving into the technology. So mm-hmm. which I believe it's a good transition for both of us to work more efficiently for the company.
Yeah, of course. You mentioned mm-hmm. the first round of fundraising there. What has that funding allowed you to do so far? What was the kind of reason for the funding? Where did you see, you know, what was the opportunity for the company? What did that money allow the company to change, to transform? What issues did it allow the company to solve?
Mm-hmm. I would say that the VC really sees us that as one of the few companies which really understood the technology, right, and had our authentic approach of how to apply the continuous fiber 3D printing. And that's one thing. Yeah. So we have the real know-how. And second, you know, because VCs always want exit, right? They want to say exit opportunities. And for them, the best exit opportunities, obviously, exit through like IPO.
Yeah.
And so I think that's actually one of the more important reason why we moved to the market in China, not only because of we sell in China, but like, so you look at the net worth for the public companies for the EM industry, like nowadays in the world. Actually, the Chinese companies, for example, Fosun and BLD, have the highest evaluation. Well, it's nowadays actually a bit of, you know, I would say trouble for the, yeah, the giant companies in the New York Exchange, right?
Yeah.
So the evaluation doesn't look really good. So I think VC has really to take into this part into account. Yeah. So in China's stock market, we had only successful and big metal 3D printing. And for this composites 3D printing, there's no major player yet. Yeah. And we, everyone agrees that we have the best chance, right, to fit in this role.
And I wanted to talk about, obviously, you guys move into China. The Chinese market is huge, right? And, you know, you're based in Shanghai, which is, I guess, one of the main hubs, but the country and the manufacturing landscape is still so huge. Talk to me about the strategy that you have to implement to, you know, make Anito print and composite 3D printing and fiber 3D printing as big as it needs to be and get it out to as many manufacturers and you know, academic institutions as you can. How do you guys plan for that? Because the market is so huge. How do you do that, and how do you do that quickly?
I think here I want to maybe address like one important point. I would be like, the market in China theoretically is huge.
Yeah.
But like, you look at the mature market of industrial 3D printing users, I would believe it's still like the market goes mostly to North America and Europe. Yeah. Because the understanding of how to use this technology, I think most of the Chinese manufacturers are still falling behind. But like, the good news is they're catching it up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think our strategy, our top priority is still like focusing on the global market. Yeah. Because it's much less effort to educate the market. You just have to deliver a good solution and a great product.
Mm.
Well, in the meanwhile, we see the Chinese market as our like second wave of growth.
I see.
But it really takes a lot of effort to educate the market and, you know, to evangelize this solution. And you have to do a lot of, you know, design. You have to design the parts for the customer, and you have to give them free, like them parts for them to try. Yeah, right. And also you have to take care of like the after sales service. But we do see more and more results coming up. Mm-hmm. So our approach is, we picked few cases with top companies in different industries, and we replicate these use cases.
That's interesting. And what are some of those use cases? What do you see as the, you mentioned jigs and fixtures before, what are the key opportunities for manufacturers with this fiber 3D printing technology?
Yeah, I think continuous fiber 3D printing, also like 3D printing, it's still like, you know, it's relatively, if you wanted to manufacture and product, it's still relatively expensive, is, you know, of a production cost. So it's more suitable for this high-end product, yeah, which our customer would have like higher margin, right, and have much higher requirements on the performance of their product. So we, in terms of end-use parts, we do not want to replace, you know, old-fashioned industry. Yeah, so, but I think the great trend is, there's like emerging market for new product, such as like, you know, there's like very hot topics for like commercial aerospace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's say like humanoid robots, and especially like eVTOLs. Yeah. So we have been almost talking with every single, you know, eVTOL companies in China, and also like there's tons of humanoid robots companies, or like, yeah, robots, other kinds of robotic companies. Yeah. And yeah, they really need, you know, lightweight parts with complicated shape, and that's exactly our niche.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, obviously, you guys are headquartered in China now, but you know, still the global market is a focus for the company. How would you assess the adoption of Anisoprint products so far? Obviously, the company kind of came to market with the desktop series, and more recently has kind of expanded into the larger format system. So how would you assess the adoption? Is it still that you need to educate prospective users on why they should use fiber 3D printing, or do you find that manufacturers, you know, understand it, pretty immediately?
I think that's a quite interesting point. Because what we found just from our experience, and those who understood, like really understood it, and those who, don't understand, you really have to, spend, time, to bring the solution, right, to coach and, to tell them what is the real benefit of the, continuous fiber. And that's, not the easiest approach.
And in terms of moving from what is initially a desktop 3D printer to the larger format systems, how challenging is it to scale the technology, I guess, from a technical perspective and perhaps from a business perspective too? Because the bigger the machine, obviously, the more expensive it is to make. Of course, the more value it is once you sell the machine. How challenging is that for the company to start at a smaller format and a compact system and then move to a bigger platform?
I think it's in big industrial machines are like never easy to make. Not even easy to design. So it took us like more than I think 3 years. So after we introduced in the desktop machine to the market, and then we starting to launching the industrial product. And I think that the key point of our industrial product that because it's more targeted for like end use parts. And for end use parts, that's why we enable the machine to print with high temperature, high performance engineering plastics, like such as like PEKK and PEK, for example.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about materials. So what materials and fibers are available at the moment for customers to use? And what are the materials and fibers that you're working to develop and make available in the future?
Well, as an Anisoprint, we prefer to, and it's our approach to offer customer more like open source solution. Well, but open source is not always the easiest approach for customer to use, especially if they wanted to easy print easy print. So we do also at the same time of like bringing this opportunity to be open, we also pick some like most frequently used materials. And we fine tune. And we put into our profile. So for industrial machine, we have like low temperature material and high temperature material. And for low temperature material, we widely use nylon and like PETG. And PETG is good material because it has a quite good bonding with carbon fiber. And also because for end use parts with higher performance requirements, we introduce the high temperature matrix material as well. Like say like PI. And PEKK. And also for these two materials, we also come up with a PI impregnated carbon fiber and PEKK or PEK impregnated carbon fiber. So they could be, well, mixed together with the matrix.
Coming back to the Chinese market, you mentioned that Anisoprint is one of the few fiber 3D printing companies out in China at the moment, and you have a, you know, a really big opportunity because of that. But also the Chinese market will be part of the company's second wave of growth. So can you provide some insight into the demand for fiber 3D printing today in China, and I guess how you expect that to develop over the next few years?
I think it's a pros and cons, like for being the almost one and only local manufacturer for carbon 3D printer. The pros is we need, barely face competition. Well, but the cons is that it's quite like funny to like talk about it, but the reality is most of the potential users or customers in the market, like the kind of don't really understand the difference between chopped fiber, you know, 3D printing and the continuous fiber 3D printing. And because, you know, the chopped fiber 3D printing manufacturers, you know, they also call themselves as carbon fiber 3D printer. Yeah, and when we come to customer, and usually the very first thing we have to tell them, you know, there is a difference. Yeah. So continuous carbon fiber gives you the strength you could replace metal. Well, this cannot be done with like chopped fiber.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So we went on almost like, you know, as a many as, you know, trade shows and conferences, you know, talk about it. You're right. Yeah. To bring people like this news, there is a, you know, new technology. Yeah. But I think the demand is right there. Yeah. Right. And the demand is solid. Well, but continuous fiber, I would say it is like value added to it. It's not like a must, but it's very add value to your current manufacturing method or your like current end use parts making method. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing we need to do is add the forerunner. So we have the responsibility to take up the role to like tell the market there's this solution. Yeah. Uh-huh. And people who hear it, we'll start to learn about it and we'll later adopt the technology. And we say it's like happened year over year, right? So in the first, it was like very hard to convince customers. Yeah, so we basically had only educational customers. Yeah, right. So after 3 years, so our percentage of industrial end use customers just like growing and growing.
And as you base yourselves in that market and you try to grow the company. And I want to come on to what the future holds for Anisa Print in a minute. But what do you see as the biggest challenges for a company like Anisa Print to overcome over the next few years?
Yeah, that's a big question. Okay, I think I will break it down to two parts.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, I think at first, the first biggest challenge, and this is a point that I always addressed to the team, that we are like a very diverse team. So we have from the very beginning, we have like team members from a very diverse backgrounds. Not only China or Russia, we actually have union employees from Germany, from states. So we don't really limit ourselves as like a company in some certain country, right? So we really embrace diversity and we really welcome people like of various backgrounds like joining our team. So and we believe like, you know, people with different backgrounds are good at like very different things, and it's like great power will be generated if you put all these people all together. But on the other side, it's also like biggest challenge because from the beginning you have to manage a team, like, you know, people have the difference, so they have different strengths, they also have different habits, you know, they have different culture, they have different way of understanding things, and they have different ways of like execute their plans. So obviously this is like a constant challenge we try to overcome inside our team. And I think the second challenge is the continuous fiber solution is still relatively a new technology, not only to China, but also to the world. And there's still like tremendous amount of work you could do to improve, this product and also improve this technology itself. So on the one hand, we want to polish our product. On the other hand, we want to further develop the possibility of this very new technology.
Okay.
I think this is a challenge.
Let's talk about that then, when you look at the product that you have today, what do you see as the areas that, that can be improved to, you know, to make this this product and this technology better?
So from the current product, I would say like the first, we could really have a lot to do with user experience. Yeah.
Right.
And this is a never ending process. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I think not only for conductive fiber and for the whole, like, you know, 3D printing, you know, itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even for like FDM, so we have been seeing like, right, I think over the last 2 years, you know, the Spambo Lab has been widely discussed for like almost everyone in the industry. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So the kind of the FDM user experience has been brought to like another level for like consumer markets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also for conductive fiber, there's also like a lot you could do, right, to increase the reliability, right, and to increase the easiness of design itself. Because to design for FDM and to design for conductive fiber, you know, composites parts are like, yeah, wholly different. And we want to also simplify this process for our customers.
Uh-huh. Okay, that sounds interesting. And how do you imagine you can simplify that design process? Is that bringing in things like generative design and computational methods and taking some of that responsibility away from the human operator and giving some automated help to the user?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I think the people who adapt to our technology, yeah, they 100% want strengths. Yeah. And the first thing is they want to know, when I add this amount of fiber and how much strength we could achieve. Yeah.
Right.
So we want to first increase this functionality in our software. So the customer could see immediately what is going to be the ultimate, like say, yeah, strength for the parts they wanted to print. And second, yeah, is we want to use the fiber efficiently because fiber is still like an expensive material. And the best approach is to use it wherever like you need it, right? So where, because no matter which part you print, like the load is always on like certain directions. The load is not like, you know, on every area of the part. So we only wanted to reinforce wherever the load is. So actually, in order to do this, I think 3 years before we introduced this like mask function in our software, which you could manipulate and, you know, add a fiber to the exact loading area. But this, yeah, is still like a semi-automatic process. Yeah, you still have to like know how to kind of like make some joints. Yeah. I think what we really want to do is, and what we are doing is we want to automate this process for our customers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and there's the principles of how to design the structure of composite material, like how to, you know, introduce topology, right, to the design. So we want to integrate it with our understanding of the technology to our software itself. So the customer don't have to worry, how do I design? They just have to throw the parts with the origin design, and we're going to redesign and we're going to simulate the strengths. Yeah. If it's satisfying for customers, they just click print and they get like the fiber reinforced high strength parts.
Well, Ryan, thank you for your time today. My last question is, what comes next for Anita Print? You mentioned the first fundraising before. There's, you know, obviously you mentioned IPO as well as perhaps an exit for those investors. What do you see as the next steps for the company? And I guess what can we expect to see from Anita Print in the next few years?
So so we actually have quite like new things happen. Yeah, I would say like just for like this year, right? So in March, we opened our new like branch office in Frankfurt, Germany. Yeah, so okay. That's going to be where we approach to our like European customer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then so like next month we will like open our office in North America. Yeah, mm-hmm. And we picked the location to be like Los Angeles, California.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we're also gonna close our second round of investment. Yeah, we already had like preliminary agreements with potential investors. And we believe we're going to close the deal, I think, in the second quarter. Yeah. As for the, in the longer term, if you see like next few years, right? So we're going to just keep bringing new products, like new, both in terms of like the software, like hardware. Yeah. And I think both for like the smaller product and at the same time, the big product. So, yeah. By big product, I'm talking about we wanted to make the our like robotic solution a standard product, and that's what we have been like spending a lot of energy doing.